Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
Ever feel like your WordPress site is moving in slow motion? Switch to Kinsta's managed hosting for WordPress and watch it fly. Host your site on Google Cloud's fastest servers with worldwide data centers so your pages load instantly. Need help? WordPress experts respond in under 2 minutes and will migrate to your site for free. Try it yourself. First month free at Kinsta.com. That's Kinsta.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
We want a dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
All right. The Cable Dahmer Arena.
Cable Dahmer? Is that a person?
Cable Dahmer. Yeah, no relation to Jeffrey.
Cable Dahmer. What is that?
I imagine it's a cable.
Oh, it's new. It's new in used car dealerships in Kansas City.
Oh, okay. That's very blue collar for naming rights, I guess.
Yeah.
We should get an arena outside of Independence, Missouri.
Well, I'm glad to see them do well enough that they can buy a whole arena, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's a 5,000 seater.
Yeah, that's good.
Wait till crypto gets its hands on this arena. Wait till they find out about the Cable Dahmer Arena.
Yes. All right.
All right. Well, support your local Cable Dahmer. We have just kicked off the show with all the latest news going through the latest revolving around Seth Rollins as well, WWE not renewing Ridge Holland's contract, the timetable that Kota Ibushi has shared for his horrific injury that's going to keep him away for a long time, and a ton of announcements from New Japan, from the Super Junior Tag League, Tanahashi's final homecoming, some thoughts on King of Pro Wrestling that Wei and I got to see, and NXT teeing up Halloween Havoc for a couple of weeks going through Tuesday's show, and the California State Athletic Commission unanimously supporting the Muhammad Ali American Boxing Revival Act.
All of that in the first 35 minutes of the show that we just did in the Post Wrestling Cafe, where you can also, at present time, find our New Japan Pro Wrestling, King of Pro Wrestling review with WH Park and Karen Peterson. As well, just dropped this afternoon, Rich Fan and WH Park pulling double duty in the cafe. Their Peacemaker Season 2 review on DCU later. Quite the interesting response to the season finale, and I'm curious to hear what Rich and WH said.
Okay. Worth the time. I've heard good things about Peacemaker Seasons 1 and 2.
I've heard mostly good things, except for this finale, which has received some very mixed response.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Did they not make peace?
I mean,
you're not allowed to talk about it for at least what?
I truly don't know.
Nine years. All right. Well, you can check out all of that. And on Thursday, Wei and I will be putting out a new Rewind Away covering the 1992 G1 Climax, featuring the likes of Shinya Hashimoto, terrific Terry Taylor, Keiji Muto, and ravishing Rick Rude. And Rick Rude lives up to his last name in front of an all-Japanese audience. And how can he get heel heat in 1992?
Okay, yes. And let's not forget stunning Steve Austin himself taking on Keiji Muto. What a dream match.
That's right. Yeah, Austin gets to the quarterfinals. So this was the vacant NWA World Championship after Flair had left the company the year prior, and he still had the physical championship belt, and then it ends up being vacated, and this is the tournament to crown a new champion, and thus we have the WCW involvement here with Dusty Rhodes and Bill Watts taking in great seats that they had facing the hard cam for all of these matches. And boy, what a poker face these two had. You couldn't tell that they, you didn't know if they were watching the greatest show of their lives, the worst show of their lives, or if they were just in desperate need of a smartphone in 1992 to keep their attention.
I've been to wrestling shows where like I've had those seats, and I hated them. Like I almost didn't want to sit there. Because I don't want my face to be on screen having to react. If you don't react, you know, that says something. If you react too much, that says something too. Anyway, hate those seats.
It's tough. That's why way
green shirt guy can keep them.
The nosebleeds. As well, coming up, we'll be back Friday night with SmackDown. And then Saturday night, we will be doing a Wrestle Dream review covering the show from St. Louis. So you can tune in late Saturday night for Way and I's review on that. And then the weekend caps off with the NWA podcast on Sunday night with Nate and company, as they will be going through all the latest and greatest in professional wrestling.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So take a deep breath, and it is time to go into 3 hours of AEW, the go-home edition. And boy, I was ready to go home after 3 hours of tonight's show. 2,239 tickets distributed, according to WrestleTix, this being down. The last time they ran this arena was 2 years ago, where they did just over 3,600. So it was not a big crowd here in Independence, but they were in for a lot of wrestling tonight. They recapped Kota Ibushi's injury. This was actually brought up several times on the show and even incorporated into Don Callis's heel promos and mocking Kota Ibushi and focusing on the attack Mark Davis made in his return, and then Kenny Omega coming to make the save and Jack Perry approaching him backstage on Collision, setting up tonight's trios match. The first 5 minutes of the show were pretty much all dedicated to this recap and teeing up every match for tonight and for Wrestle Dream on Saturday. It's like, here it is in our opening quarter, where typically we have the most people watching, and they did this like hard sell for like the first 5 minutes of the show.
Kind of like what we just did for the Post Wrestling Cafe.
Are they taking our formula from us? So to start things off, we are not starting with a match, but instead with Renee's sit down with Chris Statlander and Toni Storm, their famous last words. And Storm thought that she would feel free when losing the title. She thought she was going to be Anderson Silva, but she feels nothing without it, and she isn't sure who she is without the belt. Statlander says, "I am constantly evolving. I'm already different than the person who beat you at All Out. I am as dangerous as the cosmos are large. Aren't we all?" Storm retorts that pro wrestling is a lie that reveals the truth. We have told some ridiculous lies, but at Wrestle Dream, we will find out the truth. Chris says, "You already know the truth. You just have to accept it." And the two agree to go meet each other in the ring. So they leave Renee here in the back, and they march out to the ring and get into a brawl. Storm is offering, Chris offers to let her get in a free shot, but Storm is not going to take the bait. Hits her with a German, and then it's the opposite. And neither wants to take a free shot on the other, and it climaxes with a kiss on the forehead, as we got the same gesture to open up Raw and Dynamite this week.
Uh-oh, those ominous kisses to the forehead.
Right? Oh, what could that mean?
I found this to be an interesting way to do a go-home segment, talking like backstage with these two, and then having that bleed out into an in-arena brawl. And I guess I wonder why they didn't just do it all in arena. And I'm just wondering if there was like an element of, you know, needing to do multiple takes for the benefit of, you know, some of the participants here for a segment like this. Just makes me wonder. But it did provide like a slightly different sort of vibe to it that, so in all of this, this is still, to me, very much a Chris Statlander experiment. To me, a lot of the focus is really on her throughout this, you know, like the first few weeks of this run, right? you're dealing with Toni Storm, who is one of the most developed characters at this point in all of professional wrestling. Having to share the stage with her, doing this sort of like very character heavy type of like dialogue exchange, is a very tough spot for Chris Statlander. And I think it's become very apparent that like she's still somebody who's still trying to find who she is as not just a babyface, but as just a champion, or just even as like a fully formed professional wrestler in this company. I sense she's still trying to find her voice. She's kind of speaks as if like she's everything she was in the past rolled into one. So you're still getting, you're getting hints again of like the alien thing. And ultimately, I just think it's still a little bit confusing about, you know, what the actual identity is. And I sense they're still searching for it. And I think that's been somewhat evident here, but I think the delivery and the confidence are like decent. But this is still the type of run where she's having to find herself under the spotlight. So,
yeah, and primarily backstage, she also had to do a Toni Storm segment, like playing that role as well. You know, which is it's a tough spot. I think it was, yeah, where she had like this very, very involved dialogue to have to go match wits with Toni Storm. Jack Perry had a much easier calming influence in that he was just sitting back cutting wood. Just had a block of wood. He was cutting with like a knife. Okay.
Whittling is the term.
Whittling. Okay. I'm sorry. I haven't whittled since Boy Scouts. He is grateful for the Young Bucks, but when I needed you most, you didn't have my back. So I had to look to the past for someone who did, and Luchasaurus growls.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That takes us to GOA and Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin in our tag match with MVP and Ricochet in opposite corners. So Khan hits a Samoan drop on the floor. They're in control of Bobby Lashley until he manages a belly-to-belly on Toa. In comes Benjamin. He sends Ricochet flying with this step-up knee, sending him off the apron. He delivers Germans to Khan. And then MVP's Kane ends up in the ring. And, of course, there is one rule among AEW referees. If anything is spotted in the ring, you drop everything and you make sure this object is not only removed, but you interrogate everybody at ringside for as long as necessary to find out who put this in the middle of the ring. And if anything happens behind that referee's back, that's the risk you have to take to make sure that this kind of interference never happens again.
There must be some sort of like, referee's code that they have to swear by, where they said, if there's any sort of object that is in the ring, I will find out, even if it takes my attention away from the match, I will have to find out who did it.
It's right? Painful.
I'll dust for fingerprints.
On these shows sometimes. It's not even that the fact that they do it, it's that they do it so much. There was a point where it was another match, and Danielson, because it was so long, literally had to clarify, and all this happened because the referee was talking to the person in the corner. It's like, yeah, and it was like 5 minutes.
Yeah. I think the fact is, I mean, we all grew up watching the same wrestling, right? These wrestlers, these bookers, these referees themselves, we all grew up watching the same sort of tropes. And when it comes time to putting together your matches, we can't really help but just kind of go back to what we've all seen in the past. And unfortunately, like, it means these sort of continued, you know, usage of these sort of overdone, very tired, you know, referee tropes.
Well, it backfired on the Hurt Syndicate, because this Kane was returned to MVP, allowing Ricochet to attack Shelton Benjamin with the spirit gun. But then MVP takes out Ricochet on the floor while Khan is still able to get the pin on Shelton in 9 minutes and 35 seconds. And then the trios rematch on Saturday has now been upgraded. We will have a tornado trios match.
Yes.
So we had a trios match at last month's pay-per-view. Then we had the street fight in Jacksonville, then a tag match tonight, tornado trios on Saturday.
That is correct. All different, you see. So, yeah. So the announcers did make a big deal out of this being the first time two, I guess, regular members of the Hurt Syndicate one of them, that the first time that one of them got pinned, and that was Shelton Benjamin here who got pinned. So maybe that'll satisfy some doubters who continue to, you know, wonder if there's any issue with either of these two take a pin. Well, Shelton took a pin here based off of some cheating here from Ricochet. But this definitely does signal a Hurt Syndicate win on Saturday, because I can't see them taking three losses, you know, unless MVP takes another pinfall. That's always possible. Overall, I found it to be a good Haas fight. I think this exposure has been really good for Gates of Agony, but they are really burning this feud out, and I just don't know how many more times I could see it, like the sort of iterations of this pairing between the Hurt Syndicate and the Gates of Agony or the Demand, you know.
I think there's more. We could still do a no DQ trios match. We could do a Falls Count Anywhere.
We got the street fight, encompassed all that.
But you could label it no DQ.
Right.
Okay.
Sure.
Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta could make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
On the Post Wrestling Cafe this month, John Pollock and Wei Ting sit down for a new edition of Talk. We are also going back to 1992 to look at the G1 climax from that year. Rich Van and W.H. Park are getting together to review Peacemaker Season 2 and look at Marvel Zombies. Plus, we have Book Club detailing Kamala Harris's new release, 107 Days, weekly editions of Collision Course, and the XL versions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. All can be found at postwrestlingcafe.com.
They showed the angle from the New York Comic Con with Darby attacking Jon Moxley. And earlier today, Jon Moxley and Darby met in a prison. I don't know how these two got here. Did they rent this place out?
Well, they said this was...
Did they commandeer a local prison in Independence, Missouri? Did Cable Dahmer pull some strings for them to get to get all their equipment in for this...
Well, maybe this is one of their used car dealerships, okay? Where, like, to talk to their clients, they have to talk to
behind,
yeah,
behind bulletproof glass. Here.
Sure, you never know how people might, you know, act at a used car dealership for.
Okay, I didn't know how they got here. So they meet and are face to face, minus the glass, and Moxley explains that this game is rigged because you were never going to put me in a coffin. What did he say about the coffin? You know, it was,
you were never going to win. I don't know.
Cause he did win. So anyway.
Yeah.
Well, but it's also rigged because neither one of them is going to say, I quit. And he asks him about joining the Death Riders. Darby says, there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about that, but I don't respect you because of what you did to Bryan Danielson. I can't go to war with someone I don't trust. Moxley explains, I did the best I could with Danielson, and this is a war for the future of our industry. Sacrifices have to be made. And Darby explains how AEW represents freedom, and you, John, are slowly chipping away at that, and I will make you quit. Moxley has never lied to Darby, and he says, your opponent at Wrestle Dream is not me. You're always fighting ghosts, and I've done that too. It never ends well, and... he yells that it's not about you when all of a sudden Big Bad Pac shows up and destroys Darby, smashing his face and leaving him bloody in this prison for dead.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to overly influence the tone. I did like this segment, just to get that out there. Okay. I know you're interpreting this as me not liking it. I actually liked all the Darby stuff on this show.
Let me just speak on that like for a second.
What, my tone?
Yes.
Okay.
That is simply the way John makes these recaps entertaining. Like, I know I've seen a lot of people.
At its core, we're recapping something that is completely ludicrous.
100%.
I can't speak to this like I'm Walter Cronkite reading the news here.
I just like read our comments sometimes, and like it's like people getting on John like, oh, why is he so sarcastic? Oh, when he's recapping all this stuff, why don't you go do something you actually enjoy?
Just be glad you don't know me, okay? Just be glad, okay?
I mean, listen, like it takes skill to sort of mock what like this ridiculous world that we're all talking about, right? He's doing it not because he hates it. He's doing it because it's...
Sometimes I do hate it.
Sure. But it's also just like an entertaining way of doing a fucking podcast. So like, I just wanted to maybe talk about that for a second.
I wasn't aware of these comments until you're telling me about them. Now I'm a little self-conscious about this.
Anyway.
John Moxley then told him that I have never lied to you and your opponent is not you. You're always fighting ghosts.
That much better. Well. Much more unbiased. Thank you for that. I thought they achieved a really cool like mood for this go home segment, you know, and I appreciate that AEW is willing to do more of these segments out of the arena like this. Might not necessarily be great for the live crowd, but I mean, I think the effect is more of a like worthwhile benefit for the people watching.
It's 3 hours. They gotta go to the bathroom at some point.
Very true. And I think it just offers creatively a chance for these artists, whether it be these two performers or like the editor, the camera people, the director, very talented people to just showcase a different type of creativity with their storytelling. I thought there were a few like key notes that were revealed here. Like the fact that Darby said there's not a day that goes by that he doesn't think about joining the Death Riders. I feel like is at least meant to be maybe somewhat of a tease. But like he did say, I don't join them because of you, John Moxley. Like I like what you're trying to do, but I just don't like the method that you're going.
It's like at its core, and I don't think this has all been explained so well throughout the whole Death Riders thing, is that John Moxley's mission statement is not one that the babyfaces should be against. It's more so the way in which he is going about this. Like he is trying to preserve his idea of what AEW should be, and he is not open-minded to these different performers, and the way in which he is going about it is something that they cannot agree with. But there are a lot of similarities. Like they do think in the same idea of John. It's the way of which you're going about executing this plan.
Yeah, all of that is the genesis of the Death Riders and what John Moxley is after, right? But what has he actually done to show that? Like, I mean, the Death Riders are also synonymous with like constant cheating, and like they never really to me explain how that somehow, you know, is in line with like what Moxley wants for AEW to change. Not to mention the fact that like I mean they were kind of positioning this match as like Darby finally putting an end to Moxley, putting an end to the Death Riders, and I also think like there's not much of a threat from the Death Riders right now, is there? Like, they lost the championship. They're just, at this point, to me, a heel group that, I don't know, are dark and brooding, and that's kind of about it. To me, Don Callis has done more to, you know, take over AEW than the Death Riders.
Maybe
have.
They'll merge.
Just, yeah. Don.
The unaffiliated Death Riders.
Ah, okay. Death Callis.
With Death family. Callis. Yeah, I think I think that the overall like Death Riders, I don't look at this as like I think there's been peaks and valleys for this group that you can look at. I think they really hit something with Hangman Page, and I think the totality of this is the hope that that this Death Riders was a device to elevate Hangman into this top role, to take Darby and get him into a top position. And that's kind of the function of the Death Riders, that it is going to, in story and somewhat in reality, get these performers, get the best out of these stars that are going to be the ones to carry this company moving ahead.
So then were they successful with the evolution of Hangman Page?
I think you have to say yes.
Why aren't they taking a victory lap? Why isn't Moxley like celebrating the fact that he's gotten, you know, Hangman to realize a better version of himself?
It's the balancing of the on-screen art with the real life, and it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense that you would be taking a victory lap over losing your world championship and creating a new star. But
hey, cool segment. Looked really cool. Sounded really cool. I'm excited for the match.
Sounded sarcastic.
No, for real. Like we're talking about maybe something that is a bigger issue, like to me, with the Death Riders after losing the championship, but it's not even that relevant to this match, which is just like going to be a cool, sick match.
Then this came out over the weekend. I'm glad they put this on television. Was Don Callis's birthday party with what would you say, like 10% of the Don Callis family?
Yeah, at this point, yeah.
There were like six of them here.
Trent was there, though.
Trent was there, and Takeshita was kind of there by on. There was no way this was by satellite. This was like on a bad Zoom stream.
Yeah, well, this was a pre-recorded .mov file that he sent through the internet. We can tell because the a little thing popped up. Oh. But of course, let's just get this out of the way because I think this deserves its own talking point. Week four. Missing in action, Andrade. Where is this guy?
Did you know that this was going to be my Halloween costume? I was going to go as Andrade. do you want a sneak peek?
Sure. Oh, that's a gag that only works for people who watch. But listen, I
don't have an answer right now. I've definitely been asking about Andrade. I hope it comes up on Tony Khan's media call. Not to say that Tony Khan is probably going to disclose what is going on. My question would be, is it a big issue or is it a minor issue? There's obviously something. This is not just a creative decision that, hey, we're going to shoot an angle with one of our biggest stars in Kenny Omega and forget it. And not just forget it, we are not even saying his name anymore. We are not referencing him. We are not showing this. Kenny's not even on this pay-per-view on Saturday as of tonight. So yeah, it's something is obviously going on with Andrade, and we're kind of left without any answers at the moment. But obviously, something is happening, and it's only a question of is this significant or is this something minor that it's just. But the fact that they're not even referencing him, it's weird. It's definitely weird. You could camouflage all of this. Like if he was not available for a few weeks, you could get by on, ways to camouflage this. Like you could do videos. You don't need this guy wrestling. You could at least have Don Callis speak on his behalf. You could be leading to him and Kenny at a future date or something like that. But the fact that no mention of him is made at all makes this you're forcing people to be speculating, asking questions rather than not even realizing that there's something up.
Yeah. The more episodes of AEW television that go by without his appearance, I mean, it's only going to become a bigger talking point.
So they're all... one thing I kind of liked about this, and I don't know if this was just by pure just random or they actually gave some thought to this, they all go to Cheers, and it's like they've got Okada and Fletcher are drinking wine from wine glasses. Hechicero, Josh, and Trent, they've got bourbon, but it's all in a glass. And then Archer's is drinking straight bourbon from the bottle. And I just thought it was like a nice, like, just differentiation among these members of how they would be drinking their alcohol, as I do see other wine glasses here. But nonetheless, this is how I was paying attention to all this. But of course, the big thing here was Takeshita giving his message. This was before King of Pro Wrestling. So his message is he's going to win the IWGP title for the family. And Okada shuts the screen off. And what happened? His response. Oh, sorry, I pressed the wrong button. I laughed out loud when I first saw this. I thought it was a great great bit here with all of them. And that's actually a fun segment. I like this segment a lot.
I pressed the wrong button. I'm so sorry. is actually a callback to when he said the same line when he cut off the Acclaim, Max Caster's rap, like way back, if you remember.
Oh, wow.
When
yeah,
they cut
yeah,
to the
yeah.
control room and he said, I pressed the wrong button. I'm so right. sorry. Oh, he is so funny. He's so funny in these situations. I thought this was a great way to both acknowledge like Takeshita and his IWGP title win
yeah.
and to continue the rivalry between Okada and Takeshita. I mean, what, you know, like, I don't know if this was ever like, obviously this is like New Japan's plan to give Takeshita the championship, but using this as like a way to further the heat between he and Okada in an AEW storyline, I think is great because of course it's Okada's championship, you know, that at least he's been synonymous for. And I know it's not the exact same championship as the, you know, first one, but it's the successor. So I'm very much looking forward to those two standing next to each other with Takeshita holding the IWGP title.
Yeah, which we'll get on Saturday when mm-hmm. they're together. So and then they showed highlights of Takeshita beating Zack Sabre Jr. on Monday. So like they really put this over like the, and because this IWGP title is going to be a big focus of the AEW storyline. So it benefits them. And we know there's this working relationship, but it doesn't always mean that they focus too much on whatever happens in a New Japan ring back on AEW programming. So.
But this is the top prize, you know, and it's a huge boost for people's impression. To me, I think there's still as much reverence for like an IWGP championship as like an AEW championship. It's certainly got more history and more lineage attached to it. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
So we go to first of several trios matches.
We did have Claudio and Roderick Strong, which we... don't worry about it. Claudio beat him.
There are a lot of matches here. So, yes, we had Claudio and Roderick Strong. The big news out of this match, Taz had his shoulder replacement surgery earlier today. So, best to Taz. He noted in advance he's going to be away for a couple of weeks. See, he was worried about the same speculation that Andrade is receiving. So, he wanted to get ahead of things. And he put this message out. I'm getting shoulder surgery. I'm going to be gone for a few weeks. I will be back. So,
could this be the ruse of this entry?
Taz, his shoulder's fine. did he do a coast-to-coast headbutt before they went live?
You watch for Taz on the Rich Eisen show.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, look out. No, Rich Eisen, I would be banning wrestlers from my show, but yeah. I think he probably enjoyed it. So anyway, they had a really nice match. It was just, this was a show with a lot of nice matches on it overall. It was a lot of
this is a promotion with a lot of nice matches. So,
yes, yeah. They were. And this was a show where I think I wanted more segments that were just drilling home the pay-per-view on Saturday. And the few we got, I thought were very effective. But this was 3 hours where it was like, we're going to fill it with matches. And that's what you got on the show. So they went 10 minutes, 49 seconds. Strong made a big comeback, hit a backbreaker on the barricade, and then one on the top turnbuckle, but then gets caught with a pop-up European uppercut. So Claudio gets the win. Josh Alexander, Hechi Cerro, and Mark Davis, the returning Mark Davis, against Kenny Omega and Jurassic Express. Callis comes out introducing Davis, his man that he has in perpetuity. They mock Kota's injury, snapping it like a twig, and Callis jokes that Kota will have a spot in the family for you when you return in 5 years. So Omega gets knocked down to the floor and gets beaten down for the first portion of this match. Excalibur compares Mark Davis to an Australian Stan Hansen. Don't tell Tony Storm that. And then in comes Omega later for a V-trigger, but Callis, who's on commentary, distracts on the apron, leading to a chop block by Alexander. Perry then gets Kenny out of the way, and he takes Davis's lariat for him. He sacrifices himself like Kairi Sane. And Omega stops a powerbomb by Davis, hits a pile driver for a two count, and then when Hechicero puts the armbar in, Luchasaurus chokeslams Davis on top of Hechicero, breaking that, and Jurassic Express end the match with a doomsday device on Hechicero, 14:57, and the Young Bucks run in, they attack Jurassic Express, and Omega is torn. These are his new buddies that he's starting to trust, but these are his old buddies who tried to murder this guy last year. But he's torn between these two because Jack Perry also tried to murder him. So he stops a TK driver, and it ends with Perry hitting a big moonsault to everyone on the floor, and conflicted Kenny is left wondering, why the hell am I not on this pay-per-view Saturday? Andrade!
I don't know what exactly he's conflicted about with the Bucks.
Yeah, they've been assholes to this guy.
Yeah.
I mean, Jack Perry has too, but Jack Perry apologized.
Well, I mean, I don't even know if we're supposed to read conflicted in there, although that might be, like, it kind of was the way it came across to me.
He was. Too. He didn't strike the Bucks.
But they talk about having, like, common enemies, didn't they? You know, he and Jack Perry. Unless they were talking about, he was talking about the Don Callis family, I suppose. Anyway.
Wouldn't you be confused if you were Kenny Omega by this point?
Yeah. How many people have put me out on this?
Everyone's taken me out. Everyone I've ever had a relationship with has turned on me in this company, and then they disappear.
Every 3-4 months I get taken out on a stretcher. I have a lot of people to get revenge on. I will say, I thought like his interactions with Josh Alexander, I really enjoyed. I like the fact that at least in the beginning of this particular match, they did treat Kenny going for revenge against Josh Alexander for injuring Kota Ibushi as something. You know, no one, like, to me, that should be the match at WrestleDream. If Andrade was supposed to be the opponent, he's not available. Do Kenny versus Alexander. That's sort of a perfect thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, they treated that pairing with a little bit of reverence in this match. I thought Mark Davis looked pretty good to me. Like, everybody in the Don Callis family kind of has, despite how many people are there, everybody does have a bit of a defined role. And I even feel like
It's through alcohol.
Sure. And I even feel like Mark Davis, like, will probably find his, because, like, they have big men in this group. They have Lance Archer. They had Wardlow. But, like, Mark Davis represents almost, like, a different type of big man in that.
Stan, like, Hansen.
Well, I was going to say he's a sloppier looking big man. And I say that, like, because wrestling needs sloppy looking big men. Like, he's wearing, like, a shirt now that he never washes. So I feel like he's kind of going for, like, a Wyatt Family, Luke Harper type of thing. And
it'd be hilarious if he's like, I'm not going for that look, but I guess that's what I'm perceived as.
He's going for the complete opposite of what Kyle Fletcher is, and that's somebody who never changes his clothes. Yeah,
I really thought this was a really strong match. I would say it was probably the best match on the show. Like, there were some very good matches, but I thought this was solid stuff. Sky Blue, Jamie Hayter, 12 minutes, 5 seconds. Julia Hart's in the corner, and so Hayter is going for the hate breaker, but it's avoided. And then they get into a big striking exchange, hits the hate breaker, but both are down. She can't capitalize and go for the cover. So then Hayter catches her coming off the apron onto the floor and suplexes her. There's a sliding lariat. Blue comes back with an acai DDT, and then it's Hayter catching her with a big lariat and follows with the Haterade. 12 minutes and 5 seconds. And they're pushing the fact that Jamie Hayter has issued the challenge for Blood and Guts, but Triangle of Madness has yet to accept. They've got a month. They have. They're thinking.
What's the rush?
Yes. A good match, though. I thought Jamie Hayter, she looked very good in this match. And we go to Tekla on the screen, who cut a promo that she was misunderstood in Europe, kicked out of Japan, and she's not impressed with Jamie Hayter. And the reason that on her debut she went after Jamie Hayter was just because you were in the ring. You were in the wrong place at the wrong time, so I attacked you. This was like the most, it could have been anyone, and it was you. But she will get toxic to the core on Saturday and dares Jamie to impress her.
Mm-hmm.
I was impressed by the backlight here.
Oh, it's green. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like toxin.
Yeah, you know? It's just like Laser Quest.
I thought Tekla's delivery was very good. I did find the words kind of corny, like, it's going to get toxic to the core.
Yeah, there was some, Chris Statlander and Tekla had some tough material that wasn't as smooth in the, you know.
Like,
the words didn't translate off the page to
me. It's going
to
get toxic to the core sounds like something you'd hear for like a Saturday morning cartoon show. Some sort of like a toxic ninja, like a Ninja Turtles thing, you know,
Captain Planet.
It's going to get toxic to the core. Yeah.
Renee is with the updated 10 belts. Monet, who corrects Renee, Ultimo Monet, which she has trademarked.
Oh, she's actually trademarked it.
I believe so. Yes.
So, I don't take credit for this, but I did see this online.
Ultimone.
Ultimone was kind of right there.
That's way better. Yeah, that's great. Whoever I mean, that's really, yeah, she should have been on top of that one. So she has now tied Ultimo's 10 belts. And this, I didn't realize, I knew all these matches were coming up. I didn't realize that Friday she's in Arena Mexico to take on Persephone. Saturday she's got Wrestle Dream. And then Sunday she's in Winnipeg to face Jody Threat for Winnipeg Pro Wrestling, which would be if she wins her 11th belt as well. So she will have three matches in three countries this weekend.
That's crazy. Yeah. I can see why she would take issue with Dave Meltzer thinking Sari was Wrestler of the Year.
I mean, people have different opinions on this many belts, this Ultimone character, but I think she's like created some like she's going out, she's going to all these different countries, she's going to these indies that she totally doesn't need to be doing. It's like a boon for these promotions that she's going to. She's going all over the world. Just feels like she's having a wonderful non-WWE career. What is she
going to do in Winnipeg is what my curiosity is.
You know what? I once spent a week in Winnipeg 1 month.
And?
I said that backwards. Yeah. I mean, it's she's probably going to be in and out. That would be my assumption.
I hope she spends some time.
Winnipeg's nice. I'm not trying to say
in October, it's perfectly fine. I don't think it's that cold right now.
Yeah. You don't go in June when you have no idea what to do and you get sent on a Monday for an event on a Saturday. Like that's right. Pushing it, right?
Right, right. So what does this mean? She'll be at Wrestle Dream. Is she going to have a match?
Well, she said here she was going to be.
She said she'll be at Wrestle Dream with her belts, but didn't really say if she'll have a match.
Yeah, she hasn't been announced for anything, so I thought they'd announce something for her.
I imagine an angle at the very least, right? Like some sort of surprise, you know, showdown involving Monet.
I guess. Like you could do you could have maybe like the winner of Tekla and Hayter challenges her or something. You do some other angle involving one of the other 30 women on the roster.
Yeah. What's Sari doing right now? She did ROH.
She doesn't have a belt. She's not of interest now.
You can still challenge.
Yeah. Well, maybe. Maybe she'll come back. And Monet will say, sorry, I'm not interested. The ops against Rush, Dralístico, and Beast Mortos for the trios belts. Hangman's on commentary. Dude, Hangman had nothing to say on commentary. And Danielson, like, probably detected he wasn't really adding anything. So he's like, what are you out here to scout with Samoa Joe? He's like, well, I'm looking for weaknesses. And Danielson's like, well, have you seen any yet? And I was like, dude, Joe's been on the apron the whole match so far. He hasn't tagged in yet. Shibata's been in this thing. Like, he had nothing to contribute because Joe hasn't even been in here yet. So I kind of, there was little need for Hangman here. I was kind of underwhelmed with the final Hangman Joe stuff because it's been so great. And then tonight it just felt like, well, we'll do the old face-off and hand the belt over. And
I totally agree. I mean, from watching this particular show, it really feels like Moxley and Darby is the main event of this pay-per-view.
And I feel it should be the main event. Like, it really does feel like if that's the big blow-off, I think this is a title match you could afford to put on before. I don't think it's a disservice to the championship. Quit match, I think, is going to be one of like the most insane matches in maybe like wrestling history. Like that's the level that I think people are expecting for this I Quit match, and like the ultimate blow off to a program.
I don't disagree with you. I also feel though it's like, I mean, how many it's like at least two pay-per-views now where Hangman hasn't main evented, right?
He headlined last month.
Yeah, but the one before that was Lights Out. Wasn't it? I'm trying to think. Like, there've been so many shows. What am I thinking about?
Well, he headlined WrestlePalooza for sure, and then before that was Forbidden Door, which had what was on last? Was it a? Yeah, you are right. There was the Lights Out Steel Cage match. So yeah, it was him and MJF were second from the top.
But it's fine. Like all the.
I mean, those are the two options. But man, you watch this show, and this show certainly felt like Moxley and Darby is your main event. So the trios match, it was a big beatdown on Shibata for a long period of time. Big reaction when Joe finally gets tagged in and he murders Dralístico. Rush had this deal where he was entering the ring and he tripped going into the corner. And then he's pulled out by Shibata, and he's like whispering something to Shibata. I didn't know what was going on here.
So I replayed this. It looked like he tripped on the ropes, and like he was starting to hold his wrist.
Yes.
Like he had hurt himself, and probably...
And you can see when Shibata pulls him out, he tells Shibata something, but then he returns for the post-match, and he seemed fine. So mm-hmm. he got involved and stuff, because, yeah, I was trying to see if it was like, if it was his arm, if it was his knee, but it was really weird. Like, it just, like, he just totally fell apart here during the end sequence, but ends with a coquina clutch on Dralístico. Good solid win for Joe in the trios contest, 11-28, and Rouge and company attack the ops. Rouge spits towards Hangman, which I guess is maybe indicating something for those two on TV in the future. So Hangman gets up into the ring, fights them off, and Joe grabs his belt and hands it to Hangman and walks out. So kind of felt like, you know, we hit our peak for this this setup in the last couple of weeks, and this kind of just felt like the extra week to get to. I was disappointed with what has been a really, really well built up match for this go home.
I was too. Yeah, it really felt like they didn't have any fresh ideas for this particular week, which is very disappointing considering I think how strong the last 2 weeks were, and how much ground that I think they needed to cover for a feud that just didn't exist, you know, like prior to the 3 weeks that we've 3 or 4 weeks that we've had it. I would have totally done another promo segment, or at least like something leading to a heated brawl, showcasing just how different this Samoa Joe is compared to like the usual Samoa Joe that we get. He's like, this to me should have been a Joe that is desperate for the championship, so desperate that he's willing to veer towards being more of a heel in order to, you know, attain it. And this was just typical Ops Trios Joe, which to me is not the best version of Samoa Joe. This just kind of reminded you of the match. It didn't really do anything to amplify interest.
On the Post Wrestling Cafe this month, John Pollock and Wei Ting sit down for a new edition of Talk. We are also going back to 1992 to look at the G1 Climax from that year. Rich Van and W.H. Park are getting together to review Peacemaker Season 2 and look at Marvel Zombies. Plus, we have Book Club detailing Kamala Harris's new release, 107 Days, weekly editions of Collision Course, and the XL versions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. All can be found at postwrestlingcafe.com. After that, it was Daniel Garcia and Wheeler Yuta against Kyle O'Reilly and Orange Cassidy. All four fought on the floor. There's a pair of double hammer and anvil elbows delivered to Kyle O'Reilly, and then Yuta applies the crossface, and Danielson just buries them. He's like, they're not hitting them with the point of the elbow, and the crossface isn't applied properly. He just buried these guys for
it.
This is stuff we had been working on.
Yeah.
Orange Cassidy comes in, hits the soul food, hits a beach break, and then Moxley appears in the crowd. Garcia and Kyle go back and forth with guillotines that they exchange. Orange Punch sends Yuta to the floor. Shafir gets involved, distracting the referee as Daniel Garcia taps. This is the portion where Danielson explains how all of this is happening because the referee is distracted. Claudio shows up, running European uppercut that murders O'Reilly, and Garcia pins Kyle in 12 minutes and 23 seconds. Death Riders continue to attack when Tomohiro Ishii and Roderick Strong come down, and then we have more as Moxley enters the ring, and Darby's music plays, and out he comes like a zombie. And Claudio runs up the ramp and just European uppercuts this guy back to Tacoma, and he is dead on the floor. Then Pac takes a turn. Then Garcia and Yuta attack him, but he keeps crawling towards the ring, eats a kick from Shafir. The conglomeration fight off the Death Riders, so Moxley is left alone, and Darby crawls into the ring, pulls out the flag that he planted at the top of Mount Everest, and tells John there's still time to say, I quit. And with that, John hits him with the Death Rider on top of the flag. And I think that John is going to get buried under this flag on Saturday.
Yeah, or get choked by it, which is what Darby was promising in the segment as well.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, as a way to make him say, I quit, being choked up by the Mount Everest flag would
be. He stands over top John Moxley and holds up the flag.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I climbed Mount Moxley.
Very good segment, I thought, to sell the I quit stuff.
I really like the Darby Moxley stuff on this show. Like, mm-hmm. It was the hardest stuff they pushed for the pay-per-view. I thought this was like the best stuff on the show.
Agreed. A lot of thought, great thought put into it. I mean, with a sort of like very cinematic tone attached to it all. I know that's an overused word these days, but you can certainly tell like they're very influenced by the movies in their storytelling. And I thought it came across here.
And then Megan Bain comes out with FTR to address Willow Nightingale. And she calls Willow stupid for trying to take her on again. You will bow down to me. And I know you've got to give people reps and chances to talk, but this was this could use some work.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you talk about Megan Bain, so much of the conversation is about her aura. And unfortunately, I mean, I think that's largely achieved by her not talking so much, because when she does speak, she does come across not like a god. She comes across like somebody who's not very good at it. So again, like you mentioned, John, like everybody needs reps. Everybody needs to start from somewhere. Unfortunately, she's like at this stage where she's got to do it on TV. I mean, you would hope though, like with her experience on the indies, that like she would be at a certain level. But I felt she was pretty like, I don't know, still kind of green in that.
Maybe before all her house show matches, she should do a promo. When AEW does their weekends.
They don't do house shows, but she works GCW. She works, you know, like I'm assuming others, maybe.
So then Big Stoke takes over. He hates Willow. He hates Jet Speed. Notes Kevin Knight has potential, but he squanders it by hanging out with Billy Ray Cyrus with an autoimmune disease.
Oh, boy. Wow.
Dax takes over. Daddy's speaking. He got a lot of heat for this. He puts over all the titles they've won, all the matches of the year, and says, we never get our proper respect. I don't know if he's alluding to them being on the ballot for the first year for the Observer Hall of Fame. But you are in the ring with God on Saturday. And then Jet Speed and Willow with Harley Cameron are on the screen. I swear to God, Bailey asked, why don't we stop bloviating and let's get down to action?
Bloviating. What does that mean?
That means to, you know, you're like just running your mouth.
Talk at length, especially in an inflated or empty way. It's a good word.
Why don't we stop bloviating and let's get down to action? Maybe Megan Bain and Speedball Mike Bailey. A face-to-face segment with those two.
In the back, where they could be coached by somebody who's really good at this. Yes, I would totally suggest that.
Harley makes a FTR joke that it stands for Fear the Wrath. And then Willow says, we'll come say it to your faces. It was just too long. They come out and we get into a big fight, ending with Willow delivering a spine buster to Dax that the crowd liked and a UFO splash from Kevin Knight, taking us right into Megan Bain and Harley Cameron, where Cameron just played the underdog, which she's very good in this role. And the crowd got into like her comebacks, the big spot being a TKO from Megan that Harley kicked out of. And this crowd was stunned. They all bought this as the finish. So Bain bridges out of a jackknife cover into a running Liger bomb and pins Megan Bain in 8:06.
No. Pins Harley Cameron.
Sorry. Harley gets pinned by Megan Bain with the Liger bomb.
Yeah, I didn't think the
crowd would have gone nuts for Harley hitting a Liger bomb.
Upset, yeah.
Yes.
I didn't think the match was that great. I thought Harley looked fine, but like not among her best performances that we've seen recently. It was especially this late into the show, not really one I found myself that engaged with.
I thought they needed another hour on top of this. That was my thought. Why Collision gets cut to an hour? Hook and Eddie Kingston are in the back. Eddie Kingston doesn't know what the name of the pre-show is called, nor where it is, but they're showing up at the tailgate brawl. They will be in action.
Yeah, they advertise it. We don't know against whom, but like it's an open challenge type of situation, I guess. Right?
Okay.
It'll probably be LFI, or somebody involving somebody within LFI, I'm sure. Yeah.
Can't wait.
I know it's Eddie Kingston's gimmick to sort of like not know what's going on and whatnot, but I mean, I thought that it came across so bad here, you know? And Hook... I understand that like having Hook next to a strong talker makes all the sense of the world. I think he kind of needs it right now. But they seem to have reverted him back entirely to being a mute, you know, except he's regressed even further than that into now like being some sort of like aloof teenager who doesn't know when or where things are. And so them trying to be like, I don't know what the name of this thing is, a tailgate. It's on, what is it, on a Saturday. I just thought, like, it made the tailgate look stupid. It made these two look just not very serious.
This comeback for Eddie Kingston has been a puzzling one. Like, I just thought that this, I was not forecasting this to be his spot, like, a month into his return where he's playing Hook's crazy uncle that's been out of town for the last 16 months.
You know, it could be because, like, of a desire to want to work off Ring Rust on, like, the lesser viewed show, perhaps. But you would have just figured, like, at least as a promo, maybe he'd be making a few more waves, and hasn't really done that yet.
Alicia interviewed Bowens and Caster. They never want to team up with each other ever again. It's up to Tony Khan. They're 2-0 as a team, but Caster refuses to be put in the ring with Anthony Bowens, claiming he has body autonomy. And they also refuse to be called the Acclaimed. So they'll team again. Main event, Brodito and Mark Briscoe against Kyle Fletcher, Lance Archer, and Rocky Romero, where Don Callis, out for the 5,000th time on this show, saved the best for last. He said, to quote Wu-Tang, "We bake the cake, then take the cake."
Mm-hmm. And he did too.
Don Callis' family ain't knowing the fuck with. And Danielson informs Callis of Mark Briscoe's 146 IQ, which is, I don't know if that's the exact number, but it's a true story. The man has an incredible IQ. Don Callis either has never heard this story before, or he was tremendous in selling this. He could not fathom that this was the truth. And they thought that the source of this tension between Callis and Mark Briscoe is that Mark's family is on pace to outnumber Don Callis' family. Archer sends Bandito into Brody. Bandito tries to lift Archer, but can't as he continues to sell the left shoulder. And then the Froggy Bow is hit to Romero. Fletcher's in for the save, and Briscoe hits a blockbuster, taking out Fletcher, allowing Bandito and Brody to hit their double team, Dante's Inferno, for the win in 10:56. Ends with El Clone coming out, because why not? And then Okada appears in the ring, belt shot to Brody, and a Rainmaker to Bandito to remind us of the tag title match on Saturday as well. And that concluded like 190 minutes of AEW on Wednesday night. This show was way too long for what they had scheduled here.
Yeah. And I know, like, these days, 3 hours doesn't seem like a whole lot when we've been through like the 3 hour SmackDown era. Like, we've been through 10 years of, like, you know, 3 hour Raws or whatever, 5 hour pay-per-views taking place like several times a month. But man, like, the pace of these shows, to me, I have more issue with like the way these shows are structured. I mean, they build this as a Dynamite and a Collision, and they basically give you a Collision at the end, meaning it's a B-level, almost like C-level show sometimes in terms of importance. And I understand they, like, you know, like, structured these shows according to ratings patterns, like, you know, putting all the most important stuff at the end. But to, like, have a viewing experience...
I'd be shocked if this three-hour special does any... Like, even throwing out, like, the new methodology. Like, this was not a show, to me, that was built for ratings. Like, felt like a show that was... just like it was filling 3 hours at different times.
There's that too, but the filler was all shoved into the final hour, which again makes sense when you're looking at a ratings pattern, but as an actual viewing experience, it kind of sucks. Like, especially like I enjoyed the Dynamite portion itself, but like the hour that was afterwards was just like, just felt like here's some more shit because I heard you like shit and we got you sitting down here anyway, so here's it. Just
they weren't dangling anything that was keeping you till the end of the third hour. There wasn't some like show long story that was going to culminate. There wasn't some promise of like your big showdown involving like Hangman and Joe to go into the pay-per-view. There was nothing that was hooking you onto this beyond you want some more great wrestling. You're going to get some moderate to very good wrestling in the third hour. Like, you're not going to complain about that, but you've also seen 2 hours of it as well. And if I was saying, hey, If you want to go back to the show, I'd recommend the Kenny Omega Jurassic Express trios match, the Darby Moxley stuff, and I think you're pretty much set. Like, those to me were like the high points of the show.
Yeah, honestly, I can't even recall most of the show because I've seen so much of it. You know, I'll have to actually like comb through it to be able to say. But I don't really enjoy these 3 hour experiments, not necessarily because of the length, because I don't think they craft enough of a sort of like well flowing show for the 3 hours. And I don't think they put enough relevant, interesting, worthwhile matches or just content in general to fill the 3 hours. So this wasn't, to me, a great experience, but I'm sure you got a great 2-hour show in there.
All right. Those are our thoughts on Dynamite/Collision. And again, we are going to be back on Saturday night after WrestleDream here on the YouTube channel. Hit subscribe, and you can always be checking out all of our stuff, including our brand new shorts that are taking the post-wrestling nation by storm. I quite enjoy these. It's the only time I've actually been scrolling through and watching myself. These are very well done. I did like the Big Data Plus panel creation. So a big shout out to Waiting's Young Lions.
Sean and Luke doing great job on the YouTube, and also our TikTok at Post Wrestling Official, and also Instagram at Post Wrestling.
Maybe they're our Oscar and Udo Ice.
They are to me. Yes, they are the knockout brothers of post wrestling digital media,
knocking it out of the park every day.
I do want to make one mention here. This was announced today by Chopped Tees that they are closing. So unfortunately, Dickie, who has put a lot of work into setting the shop up, for various reasons, it's just not necessarily feasible to keep the store open right now. So he has let us all know that. In the coming weeks, the store will be closing. So that means I don't know what the future is necessarily for the post wrestling merch store, but you know, it'll be a bit of an undertaking wherever it goes. And I don't even know, honestly, at this point, if like we're moving all the stuff yet. So all that is to say, if you've had your eye on any of the stuff that's on the store, chop-tees.com/post-wrestling, you have at least at some point in the coming weeks to get your stuff.
Yes, we appreciate all of Dickie Bird's great contributions. He has put a lot of work into Chopped Tees. So more to come when we have updates on that front as well. So we're going to say goodbye on the YouTube channel. We're going to continue over on the Post Wrestling Cafe. We'll get some feedback, and we're going to do a very brief rundown of the WrestleDream pay-per-view. This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.